This week in KMA Land, Vision Shenandoah makes Lakin Foundation pitch. McGinnis names Shenandoah Teacher of the Year. Red Oak School Board accepts Inman Elementary bids. Lack of progress plagues Hamburg School Project. Shenandoah School Board sells student housing project. And final damage totals from the 2024 tornado outbreaks. I'm Mike Peterson. Shenandoah officials are hoping for funding from the Charles E. Lakin Foundation for some major projects. Five representatives of Vision Shenandoah were among those attending a Lakin Foundation Board of Directors meeting late last week. Shenandoah is one of 51 communities in the region selected to share $165 million as part of the foundation's Revitalize Southwest Iowa initiative. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Monday morning, Vision Shenandoah Executive Director Dr. Margaret Brady says the community's 18-minute presentation covered Shenandoah's history, the progress of the organization's various dream teams, and some proposed housing projects, including duplexes planned for the former Sack and Save lot and efforts to renovate dilapidated units in the community.
So I just mentioned that we had two main focuses for housing. One was to find houses that are below 200,000, which I consider these are our primary workers in our community's housing. And so the two avenues for that was to rehab houses and then to figure out a way to build a house that's less than 200,000, which is going to be a little bit of a puzzle, but I think we can figure it out.
Brady says the presentation also covered a proposed therapeutic and mental health daycare and education program serving students from age 3 to 12th grade. Vision Shenandoah, the Shenandoah School District, and other partners plan housing the program at Shenandoah United Methodist Church's Wesley Building. Among other things, Brady says building renovations are necessary in order for the program to become reality.
It's a 1960s building. It's a nice shape, but, you know, as these older buildings, as I know with some of the older houses, you know, it takes a little work to get them up to speed. And so we want to make sure that everything is in alignment. So Lakin funds would be used to help remodel the building to get it into a state where it's really ready for that program. The school district would have to make sure that's a program that fits in within their purview. And then we'd have to have some other outside resources, like Midwest Mental Health, I think, is potentially a big partner.
Plans for the proposed Shenandoah Fieldhouse project announced last week were also covered. Brady says the meeting's general purpose was for the Lakin Foundation Board to approve Vision Shenandoah as the nonprofit organization administering the $16.35 million awarded to the community through the initiative.
Once we are approved, the way we understand it, then we will be funded with the $16.35 million. It goes into a fund with our name on it. Remember, the only thing you can do with that principal money is something that you could repay to the principal. So, for instance, you could build a house, sell the house, pay back what you borrowed plus 2% interest. And that's the only thing that can really touch that principal. Now, after the funding has been there for a while, we will be receiving some grant monies, and those are the monies that we would not have to repay. So every year we would get, depending on how much is in our bank account, we would get some interest.
Brady hopes the Lakin Foundation provides more information in the near future. Other communities making presentation at that same meeting included Red Oak, Avoca, Emerson, Griswold, Farragut, and Imogene. Some of the Shenandoah School District's difference makers were honored in special ceremonies this week. Commemorating American Education Week, members of the Shenandoah Education Association announced the Teacher of the Year and Friend of Education Award recipients for 2025 at the Shenandoah Middle School Commons Wednesday afternoon. Middle school language arts teacher and head high school wrestling coach Todd McGinnis was named this year's Teacher of the Year. Shenandoah instructors Jenny Stevens and Danielle Terry co-hosted Wednesday's ceremonies. Reading from his nomination, Stevens says McGinnis dedicated himself to the Shenandoah School District for 21 years, making a lasting difference in the lives of his students.
Todd is not only an exceptional teacher, but also a leader in our school community. As a member of the building leadership team and a high school wrestling coach, he models integrity, dedication, and perseverance. He consistently encourages students to represent themselves well and challenges them to be their best, both in and out of the classroom.
A 1994 Shenandoah High School graduate, McGinnis taught for 4 years in Council Bluffs before moving back to Shenandoah in the early 2000s, where he has lived and taught since. McGinnis tells KMA News he was honored and shocked to receive the recognition.
You know, the list of teachers that were, recognized, I just feel like they're excellent teachers. You know, I don't really see myself up at their level. I do try my best, but I was pretty shocked at it. But again, I'm proud to be voted like that for my peers.
Other Teacher of the Year nominees included Brenda Hargis, Kendria Johnson, Trisha Johnson, Grant Statz, Abby Weinrich, and Crystal Whitmer. Middle school at-risk interventionist Sonia Leese was named the 2025 Friend of Education recipient. In reading her nomination, Stephen says Leese is deeply committed to supporting students, families, and staff.
Sonia goes above and beyond in her role. She manages student attendance with care and consistency, always looks for ways to help students succeed. She is also quick to step in and assist in the office with anything that's needed, showing her flexibility and teamwork. Known for her calm and steady presence, Sonia handles every situation with professionalism and compassion.
Leese has worked with the Shenandoah School District for over 25 years and was a 1990 Shenandoah High School graduate. Leese says her role as an at-risk interventionist fits well with her career in social work and working with students.
I like working with kids. They're just fun and they kind of keep you young. And this position came open. It was right up my alley with a degree in social work. And it just happened to work out.
Other Friend of Education nominees included Natalie Denton, Heather Weiss, some guy named Mike Peterson, and KMA. This year marked the 53rd Teacher of the Year Award. Red Oak school officials took another step toward an expansion and renovation project at Inman Elementary School. By a 4-0 vote Wednesday evening, the Red Oak School Board approved the low bids on the facility improvement project, totaling just over $3.27 million, along with a bid alternate to replace a chiller and air handling unit for an estimated $566,000. Plans call for a roughly 1,200-square-foot addition to the north end of the cafeteria and a 480-foot expansion for the secure entryway, a proposal school officials have been discussing for nearly 3 years after a facilities assessment in 2022. Red Oak School Superintendent Ron Loren says he was pleased with the number of bids the district received on the project and that the majority of proposals were within the project's budget. However, he says two bid proposals must be rebid.
Bid package number 7A, metal wall panels, was rejected, and we need to rebid that because it was over the budget amount. So Boyd Jones put a placeholder in the budget of $115,305 just to make sure that we're tracking everything. And then there was another bid, the bid package 9A, which relates to metal stud framing, drywall, ceilings, and paint. That was rejected because it was an incomplete scope of bid, so it needs to be rebid. There is a placeholder of $167,810 there.
Loren says four bid alternates were also proposed, including one related to painting he felt could be handled in-house. While two of the alternates surrounded replacing the flooring in the cafeteria and safety vestibule, Loren says the more urgent proposal surrounded the chiller and air handling unit.
The one that we probably have to get a grasp on relatively quickly is the chiller and the air handling unit. And you can see that ad alternate came in at $566,342. And the reason that we have to attend to that relatively quickly is because it needs to be designed. And the longer we wait, the more difficult it's going to be.
Layla Knowles is director of pre-construction with Boyd Jones, the project's general contractors. Knowles says while the figure for the chiller and air handling unit is a budgetary number, due to it still needing to be designed, she didn't expect that figure to change much once it's repriced by Camblin Mechanical.
They wanted to make sure it was complete, so they even included things like roof patching and some electrical work and not just the mechanical part of it. And I know that they wanted to be a little bit conservative, so I mean, there's a chance it could come down a little bit, but I wouldn't see it coming down significantly.
Funding for the district's physical plant and equipment levy, or PEPL, and secured advanced vision for education or SAVE accounts are expected to cover the project. The board is expected to further consider the two bid packages out for rebid and other alternates at its December meeting. Plans call for the project to begin in March 2026, with work estimated for wrap-up before the start of the 2026-27 school year. Litigation and liquidated damages are possible with a Hamburg School District construction project facing continuing delays. Bob Ridgway of Farnsworth Architects briefed the Hamburg School Board this week on issues associated with Marnie Simons Elementary School's expansion and renovation project. Earlier this year, the board approved the bid of Graphite Construction Group of Des Moines, totaling more than $2.9 million. Hamburg School Superintendent Greg Cruikshank tells KMA News the company faces damages of $250 per day associated with the project's delays. He says board members stress the need to complete certain projects before winter's arrival.
Get the roof completed on the building, get the envelope completed, so interior work can be done here when it gets cold. You know, it's kind of the same old story regarding just the lack of progress and the lack of attention to progress on the part of the contractor.
And despite bad weather at the early part of construction, including Iowa's second wettest July on record, Cruikshank attributes the delays to other factors.
From our perspective, just the lack of manpower and getting the manpower here and coordinating all the different subs to stay on task. You know, I think that is the biggest concern from the board. It's the first thing I noticed when I started working here July 1 was that there just wasn't a lot of workers on site doing work on a consistent daily basis.
Original plans call for the project's completion this month. Cruikshank says the new completion date is up for debate.
You know, the board still believes that the project should have met substantial completion by November 11th. And the contractor believes because of different delays and weather and some of these other considerations, which there may be some validity, but not total validity regarding that, they look at December 20th. And that's where we're going to get into this process of debating this, because there's no way it's going to be ready by December 20th.
Voters approved a $3.1 million bond issue 3 years ago this month for construction of an 8,000-square-foot fitness center and two additional classrooms at the elementary school. Shenandoah High School's long-running housing rehabilitation project has an owner. At a special meeting late Monday afternoon, the Shenandoah School Board accepted an offer on the property at 213 West Sheridan Avenue and the west half lot of 211 West Sheridan Avenue for $150,000, with pre-approved financing and no contingency. School officials purchased the property from the city back in 2022 for $1 for students in the high school's building trades class to renovate the dilapidated structure into a livable residence. After 3 years of work, the district showcased the property in June. Shenandoah School Superintendent Dr. Carrie Nelson told KMA News the renovation was not an easy project.
To start with, it was a house that we had decided to rehab, and so it's not new construction. And so anytime you take on the process of rehabbing a house, you realize that there's a lot that goes into it, and, you know,
and board members approved the $150,000 bid over two others. Final damage totals are rolling in from the 2024 tornado outbreaks in KMA land. Montgomery County Emergency Management Coordinator Brian Hammond presented the final report on the May 2024 storm damage at Tuesday morning's County Board of Supervisors meeting. Hammond says five twisters walloped the county the week of May 20th, including two on May 21st. One damaged the Red Oak Street Department's facility, while another large twister toppled a 300-foot communications tower near Villisca and decimated Hackelbarney Wood Park. Another tornado touched down in the county in the early morning hours of May 24th as part of a derecho moving through western Iowa. Hammond says the damage, including county, city, and RECs, totaled almost $3 million.
On the county side, obviously, we all know the communication loss of the Villisca Towers was our largest expense, which is over $1.2 million. Conservation losses, $304,000. REC has $184,000, and that's all numbers that they've reported to FEMA for reimbursement. That doesn't mean that there wasn't more. That's just what they're reporting to FEMA to hopefully get their reimbursement as much as they can.
Hammond says the county's secondary road suffered less than $700,000 damage as a result of flooding and heavy rain on May 21st. The city of Red Oaks' losses totaled around $475,000. Hammond says the county's conservation department's damages, including those at Hackelbarney, totaled more than $304,000. Now, of that total, the county's insurance coverage totaled more than $277,000. Hammond says the county initially applied for more than $26,000 in FEMA funding to cover the park's damages.
This has been a long, drawn-out process. It's a very tedious, time-consuming, frustrating process. We went back and forth with FEMA I don't know how many times. The thing about FEMA, when there's a disaster, obviously we all know it takes time. The issue with FEMA and their people is they rotate out every 90 days. So if a project was not completed in 90 days, if the new people came in and they didn't like the verbiage or they didn't like the project, they couldn't add 1 + 1 = 2 on the spreadsheets. Everything got kicked back to the very beginning.
Hammond says the county and FEMA reached a settlement of more than $24,000 for a total reimbursement of over $288,000. With more than $269,000 in expenditures, the county still has almost $29,000 available.
The park itself is back open. It's whole again for the most part. I don't think it'll probably ever be the same as it was before the tornado. But that's in part because a lot of those vendors worked with us. So we were able to get things replaced, cut some costs on our debris removal, some things that we wanted to do that we didn't actually do, and have been able to make it work.
Hammond recommended that to allow conservation to spend more than $22,000 of the remaining funds, with the county absorbing the remaining costs through a local match and out-of-pocket expenses. Pottawatomie County also had its share of weather calamities in 2024. The county was included in three presidential disaster declarations last year after the April and May tornado outbreaks, as well as the June Missouri River flooding, spurred by historic rainfall and flooding in northwest Iowa. Pottawatomie County Emergency Management Director Doug Reed told the county's Board of Supervisors Tuesday damage reported to the Federal Emergency Management Agency totaled more than $14 million.
The insurance is covered just about $2.9 million of that. Current FEMA approved costs are at $10.2 million. We still have projects being developed for some of the applicants, so that's not going to be the end-all be-all, but about $1.3 million in additional mitigation funds for those projects have been identified to be added to those projects.
Of the approved projects for FEMA funding thus far, Reed says the local cost share is roughly $2.3 million, or 25% of the total project cost. However, he says the state can also chip in funding for that local match.
The applicants are responsible for 25%, unless, of course, we are in compliance with the state laws regarding the emergency management program, or emergency plans are certified, those kind of things. Then the state will kick in 10% to that 25 match. Yeah, so we're good. So out of that 2.3, it'll be split between us and the state when their final closeout. We'll see that.
Among the 13 applicants for FEMA funding, Reed says initially 97 projects were developed, 17 of which were withdrawn for various reasons, such as being combined with another project, not meeting the public assistance program guidance, or not qualifying for funding. Now, those projects came from various entities, including the county, secondary roads, and other cities throughout the county, including Minden, which was devastated by an EF3 tornado in April of that year.
We funded and closed 10 of those projects thus far. The remaining ones that have been approved, I mean, roughly 10% of everything was put in for. We have 35 in queue right now that are obligated, that we're just waiting for the federal share. And then that would progress to the closeout process with FEMA. Once that happens, then the state will review everything, get any additional information they need from us on those projects. We'll close it out with them. They'll send us the 10%, and then we're pretty well done with that.
Minden alone, Reed says, had roughly $5.7 million worth of projects approved through FEMA. Plans for a subdivision north of Glenwood took another step forward this week. Following a public hearing Tuesday morning, the Mills County Board of Supervisors approved a development agreement with Mark and Jennifer Hughes for the Whitetail Run subdivision, located on 230th Street just north of Glenwood. The approval comes after the supervisors created an urban renewal area in October in order to use tax increment financing, or TIF. Supervisors Chair Lonnie Mayberry says TIF funds generated from the development will eventually be used to reimburse the Hughes family for the cost of building a road in the subdivision.
Those taxes are froze, so the tax money still goes to the public. It's the school still gets theirs. And then as the incremental value raises, if they put a $500,000 home in, that'll bring more taxes, more students for the schools. And they use that money, the incremental growth, to pay the development costs. After so many years, they come on blind and they are fully taxable.
The move follows after a few residents spoke during the public hearing. Mills County resident John Shirley questioned why the county was using TIF for subdivisions instead of focusing more on affordable housing options.
If you're pricing homes $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, nobody in my neighborhood is going to be buying it. And I don't know who in Mills County is the target, but I assume that you're going to bring people out here that have got money, like has been done for the last 30 years, at the expense of affordable housing. nobody young can buy a home.
Residents also questioned why Hughes built the road into the subdivision prior to having a TIF agreement in place. Mark Hughes says the project has been in the works with the board for nearly 3 years.
We came in before the project started and got permission to do the project, to get a TIF project approved. There's 14 lots in the subdivision. The main expense was the cost of the road, and we requested TIF to help pay for it. And the idea of TIF is new taxes that are created from that subdivision help pay for the infrastructure. If we were told no at the time, that wouldn't be a TIF project, I wouldn't have on the project.
Mayberry and Supervisor Jack Sayers voted in favor of the agreement. Supervisor Richard Crotch was absent from the meeting. Members of Red Oak Committee want the public's ideas to curbing animal control issues in the community. Rome Ozuna chairs an ad hoc committee formed by the Red Oak City Council last month to review animal welfare and control regulations in the city. Ozuna told the council Monday night the committee hopes to advise the city on how best to address animal-related issues.
Red Oak has an issue. You know, we have a problem. We've had some issues in the past. Everyone here is aware of them. With animal control, animals at large, that's what we're trying to come to terms with and hopefully find a solution that works for the animals, the people, the government, everything here locally.
Ozuna says the committee's first step is a community survey. He expects the final draft to be completed this week and to present the completed survey and related data to the council at its January 7th meeting. In addition, Ozuna says the committee is also reviewing the city's animal control efforts in an effort to streamline or clarify regulations.
A lot of the ordinances are good the way they stand. Some of them are a bit convoluted. A little extra fluff, I guess you'd say, that I think could be toned down, narrowed down, worked around, et cetera, just to help streamline daily procedures once again for you guys, for the city.
Red Oak Mayor Shauna Silvius, who is also a committee member, hopes the committee will develop an improved ordinance.
You cannot put at-large cats in the same category as at-large dogs. It's just not, you cannot control where an at-large cat wanders. So I think we're working on some of that stuff and further defining vicious dog.
Sylvia says animal control issues were among those addressed at the Community Heart and Soul event Wednesday evening at the Wilson Performing Arts Center. Nebraska city officials have yet to reach agreement with a company's loan repayment. At a regular meeting Tuesday evening, the Nebraska City City Council took no action regarding the settlement of $50,000 on a loan awarded to Waste Management Systems, LLC. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Tuesday morning, Nebraska City Mayor Brian Beckett says the city awarded the company a $150,000 low-interest loan in 2019 under the state's LB 840 Economic Growth Funds. He says another $50,000 loan was allocated in 2020 for a total of $200,000.
This company makes a different kind of heavy commercial dumpster that businesses, you'll see outside of businesses, things like that. But it's basically a structural metal frame with a heavy canvas bag or a bag that goes inside of it. So it's much lighter. It can be delivered by one person in a truck.
Despite the funding awarded by the city and a large number of contracts for the containers, Beckett says the company struggled.
It looked like a pretty promising project, but unfortunately the company started doing not so well after COVID and then stopped making payments in 2023. So since then, we've been going back and forth with the owners. We understand now that they sold the company this summer. So there's still an outstanding balance of a little bit over $155,000. So we're trying to figure out the best means to go forward.
Following a closed session Monday night, Beckett says the commissioners delayed action on a repayment settlement.
And we've decided there's quite a few questions that we have of our attorney. So our next council meeting will have our attorney back to speak with the council to speak about future options on going forward, whether to go to collections or to try and look at a settlement. But we did not approve the settlement of $50,000 last night.
More discussion is expected at the council's next regular meeting in December. And a reminder, you can hear the full interview with Brian Beckett and all our Morning Line interviews with the web stories, as well as on our Morning Line page at KMALand.com. And that wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. For more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.